Welcome to another Crime Cast by Revamp. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Patty, I'm your host, and I have Greg Murray and Tom Honeycutt here with me today, and we're going to continue our podcast on Charles Ravine's The River Valley Killer. But before that, I want to tell you a little bit about Revamp. Revamp is a 501c3 nonprofit. We're based out of Fort Smith, Arkansas, and we are advocates for crime victims and their families, whether it's a cold case, homicide, or a missing person case. It never hurts to reach out to us. We also have some resources available for victims in the area. You can catch us on Facebook at Revamp, Remember Every Victim and Missing Person, or on our website at www.remembereverywictim.com. So let's dive right into part two of Charles Ravine's. And like I said, I have Greg and Tom both here with me today. And Charles Ravine's is a subject that we discuss quite often.
Yes, his name comes into a lot of the cases.
Because he was so dark.
Yeah, he was a dark guy. You're drinking a fifth of whiskey a day. And
cocaine and meth. And
all kinds of stuff.
And white crosses. You know what white crosses are?
No.
I do. Just because my husband was around the trucking business for so many years.
Is that meth, a form of meth?
No. Well, it was speed. A lot of the truck drivers used to take it because it would keep them up for 2 or 3 days at a time. So I guess it was, I've never taken meth. I've never taken white crosses, so I don't really know.
You mean kind of like NyQuil?
Okay, I've been coughing a lot. I've been sick, y'all. So yes, I've drank a lot of NyQuil. I carry a bottle in my purse now. So
does it have a white cross on it,
no,
that bottle?
No, does it? No, it says severe cold and flu. Even though I don't have severe cold and flu, but it says headache, fever, sore throat, minor aches, pains, sinus pressure. It's good for anything. I sleep with it. I travel with it.
Shameless plug for NyQuil.
So let's go back to Charles
Ravine's.
Have a little
fun before we get into the deep, dark depths of Charles Ravine's.
One more thing.
Well, let's just go right ahead, Tom.
Forensic evaluation.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's a conclusion here. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
now you read the first part of that on our our podcast.
It was a court ordered psychological evaluation prior to the possibility of a trial or a plea. So the forensic psychologists noted the results of this evaluation indicate that Mr. Vines is of average intelligence and not psychotic. He denies that he ever received treatment for any kind of psychiatric illness. He does apparently have a significant history of alcohol and drug use. Now, the legal questions. Mr. Vines is currently able to understand rationally and factually the legal proceedings against him and is currently able to assist effectively in his own defense. Thus, it is my opinion that he is presently competent to stand trial. There is no evidence to indicate that Mr. Vines was suffering from any type of mental disease or defect which would have prevented him from appreciating the criminality of his conduct or from conforming his conduct to the requirements of law at the time of the alleged crime. While he may have been intoxicated at the time of the alleged crimes, it should be noted that voluntary intoxication cannot be used as an affirmative defense in the state of Arkansas. Thus, in summary, it is my opinion that Mr. Vines was responsible for his behavior at the time of the alleged crimes.
In other words, you can't say the devil made me do it.
Or you can't say it was the drink that made me do it.
He was so dark. Because let me go back and say something else. There was a victim in Fort Smith that was a homicide victim. We talked about those earlier. She was found brutally beaten and raped and stabbed. And in one of the stab wounds, they found foreign lung tissue. Okay? So that tells me that lung tissue probably was on the weapon that he stabbed her with.
Yeah. That's disturbing.
So that is disturbing. So let's go to the same year, and the victim that has now been called Dora Doe over on 64 Highway had her lungs and her heart removed from her body.
And this
but
would
it
be
did
in,
not match the DNA.
And this would be in 94.
So this tells me that sometime before Mrs. Wofford was killed in Fort Smith, he had to have killed someone else. I mean, how does lung tissue get on your knife? You follow me?
Yeah.
There's an unknown victim out there. Now, there has been some speculation that he may have taken some bodies from the funeral home where he was employed, where his father had been employed for many years. That's speculation. I don't have any proof of that, and no one has offered me any proof of that. But I've heard it from very many people that I've interviewed.
Now, well, the theory of Dora Doe is that she was already dead, right?
Yeah, that's one of the theories
out
there.
She may very well have been a cadaver.
Correct. One of the previous sheriffs of that county had told me that he was pretty sure, his theory is that she was a deceased victim that was intended to go to a burial site and had not been buried, and that Charles may have taken the opportunity to take a body from the funeral home that was meant to be buried and used it for his dark, evil, creepy fantasies. I'm sorry, I don't know a better way to put that.
Devious sexual behavior.
Yes.
That's more than devious.
That's sick.
Deviant.
That's more than that. I mean, come on, y'all. That's bad.
That's dark. That's sick.
But that he admitted that was his one of his most favorite fantasies. Yeah.
This guy is not a good guy. And
but he had a good family. He had great children. His children have turned out to be really great citizens of this county.
Mm-hmm.
And
Now there's a story.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can tell it, but there's a story about him and a rifle and one of his kids.
Yeah. When one of his children were younger, he took him out in the woods and he actually shot at his son, his own son, and thought it was funny. You know, there's stories about him taking his children's mother and locking her in a shed outside in their backyard. He would hold her hostage. This woman probably endured a lot more than we'll ever know.
Mm-hmm.
And she probably got into this marriage not realizing how dark and devious he was.
You couldn't have done that sober. I'm just saying, there's no way.
Was he ever sober?
I don't think he ever was sober. The more we discuss this, the more I keep thinking he's on a constant high, inebriated, intoxicated individual.
I think he was a functioning alcoholic. Because, come on, if you were stumbling drunk, you could not have committed all the crimes he committed and concealed them well enough that they didn't catch you for so many years. Really? I mean, do y'all agree?
Yeah.
So I think he was a functioning alcoholic. How he was never on the radar before, I don't know. But Tom and I have been discussing the possibilities. We have heard that he had a drinking buddy that he may have been very close to. And like I said, I'm not a drinker, but I do know I have friends that drink. And when they start drinking, they like to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm really curious, and I'd like to talk to any of those drinking buddies, whether they've been a bar stool buddy or sit in the backyard and talk, whatever.
Or just anybody who's ever known Charles Ray Vines.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Somebody that worked with him at the construction company, because he did construction for some period of time.
In one of his court files, he filed an affidavit of indigency, and he listed his employer as McCain Construction.
I saw that. Mm-hmm.
So if you've ever worked with McCain Construction or run across
anywhere
Charles
that
Ray
you
Vines,
worked with him,
we would love to speak with
him,
you.
Dated him. Ran around with him.
Bought a car from him.
Yeah.
Anything. Big... Just give us a, drop us a line at info.
Married him for 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, if you had a storage unit and he didn't pay the fees and you kept all the stuff in the storage unit.
Oh, yeah. That would be gold.
Oh, that would be gold. But, yeah, you can email us at info@remembereverywictim.com. We are looking for anything,
any information.
Anybody that knew Charles,
you know,
Ray Vines.
This whole thing about this third wife was news to us, but the fact that he could have been married in Holt, Missouri, that's something that has really piqued our interest, because we don't know what happened to this person, and his immediate family says that the most that they remember about her is she was an Indian. They thought her first name was Karen. They were pretty sure, but not 100% positive, and they believed that he had met her on some type of reservation. Now, I called Missouri. Missouri doesn't really have any reservations. So that kind of confuses me. I'm thinking it might have been Oklahoma or Kansas.
It'd have to be somewhere Oklahoma, Kansas, somewhere around in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had information that Mr. Vines traveled to Kansas City at one time.
Mm-hmm. Selling leather goods. We also know that he liked to go to Cove Lake in Paris, Arkansas. That was his favorite place to go hike and camp. And that's pretty much known by everybody that was his favorite spot. We haven't really, Tom or I, neither one have really dug into that. But we know he also was into motorcycles at one time. He was a motorcycle rider. Right. And
Did he have a cabin just north of Ozark?
So I've not been able to confirm that, but someone who was in law enforcement and did investigate this case, he went on to be a sheriff, he said that there was a cabin up there and that they did search it. Now, whether it actually belonged to Charles Revines, I don't know, but that he did frequent this cabin. But they went in and they found a mattress completely covered in blood, but it had so much animal blood that the DNA results were inconclusive.
So that's one of the reasons why we're trying to find anybody and everybody who knew Charles Revines, and so we can find out more information. Did he have this? Did he have that? Just anything that would lead us to some more answers about this guy.
Like I said, he was big into motorcycles at one time. He was known as a biker guy. In fact, one of the women that met him thought that she was probably originally drawn to him because he was the tough biker guy. I do know that he rode motorcycles up in the Ozark area, north of Ozark, where Melissa's body was found. He was an avid pool player. I've heard stories from someone that spent time in his cabin in Dripping Springs that said he had ponies and little motorcycles, dirt bikes, go-karts.
His mother was a bowler on a bowling league,
that's
wasn't
what I hear.
She?
Yes,
yeah,
I hear that.
I've heard stories that she bowled on a league.
I think actually her name may even be on some plaques there at one of the local bowling alleys, where I think she was given some trophies.
Yeah, got some trophies.
I believe.
The thing that we haven't told everybody, I don't think we have yet, is that Mr. Vines is deceased.
He died
in prison. And
as does everybody that I communicate with.
Now, Patty has this is just one of the funniest stories. We always tell everybody here at Revamp that you need to talk to them. Don't wait. Talk to them right then and there.
Yeah, Tom enacted it's called the Alvin Rule.
Yes, we have an Alvin Rule. You got to talk to them because it's not much time when it's cold cases. You need to talk to them as soon as possible because they don't end up living forever. Now, Mr. Vines, now here comes the little funny story. Now, you communicated with Mr. Vines in prison.
I did. He wasn't happy with me.
No, he wasn't. No. Do you have the letter?
I brought it to one of our meetings one time. I'm sure I still have it.
Tell us a little bit about what you asked in the letter.
Well, I had learned that any prisoner who's in the Arkansas State Prison System, if they have less than $10 in their account on the first day of the month, they become indigent. And if they're indigent and on the indigent list, they get all these commissaries free. So I wanted to ensure that he had $10 in his account every month. So on the end of the last day of the week, or the last day of the month, I would deposit $10.
So with that being said, if he didn't have anything in his account, how much money would the state give him for his commissaries?
It was around $30 to $40. It varied from month to month.
So if he didn't have any money in his account,
they would pay for it. They would furnish that free.
They'd give him $40.
Mm-hmm. But if you have $9.99 or more than $9.99, you have to buy your own.
Okay. You see where I'm going with this?
So I was knocking him out of about $20 to $30. I mean, I was knocking him out of his free stuff that he would trade.
Yeah. So the state would give him free stuff, and you were denying him that because he was just being mean
but
and not
honestly,
answering any
the
questions.
First time that I did it, I only did it so that he could afford to buy the postage to reply to my mail.
Right.
Okay. That was the reason. And then the first letter I get from him, he's pretty mad. Dear Mrs. Blah, blah, blah. Stop sending the money. Here's the reason why. I can't send it back to you, and you're cutting me out of my commissaries that I get for free. So stop it. Just stop it.
Now, why would a guy, I mean, I see no reason why we should give them $40 for commissary stuff.
I don't
stuff,
see so either.
Especially in this gentleman's case.
I was spending $10 a month just to keep him from getting it, and it was really making him mad. So I told him in the reply to that letter, just give me an interview. I want to talk to you about Dora Doe. I want to know where she rightfully belongs and who she is so she can be returned to her family. He replied back, I will not talk about Dora Doe or any of my other cases.
Yeah.
So I showed that letter to a former prosecutor, and he said that's probably the closest he's ever come to admitting that he had a part in Dora Doe. But he was getting pretty irate with me. The last letter was, you know, it would start out, dear Mrs. whatever. And then it would say, please stop. I mean, I'm telling you for the last time, quit sending me money. You know, I'm losing out on my free stuff. And I would just tell him, you know, give me an interview. Well, then he suddenly died. And, yeah.
He passed away.
So he doesn't get free stuff or my $10 every month.
Yeah. That's karma. Yeah, karma.
Yeah.
But for him to come that close to admitting something else, especially with the deal, I guess it was between, I can't remember who said it, but reviewing it was, if you admit to anything else, they'll seek the death penalty on him. And I think that may have been one of the reasons why he clammed up on a bunch of stuff.
I think that he admitted to the ones that he knew they had DNA, positive DNA, because they told him they did. And they said if he would confess, they would take the death penalty off the table. So he did. Then my understanding is another officer went in and interrogated him and said, look, if we find out you've done any more, we're going to put the death penalty back on the table. And he clammed up at that point.
I would have just stuck with life behind bars without the ability.
Yeah, because he didn't really have that long a life.
I mean, come on.
I mean, he was just a little bit younger than me, and he's already gone.
Yeah. It is what it is now. Yeah, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, you know what I mean? But it would have been nice for him to have – I think the families would have wanted – a confession out of some of the stuff that we may have been able to find out from him.
Okay, here's the thing. If my grandmother was supposed to end up in a grave and didn't, and I'm not saying this is what happened, but if my grandmother was supposed to be buried and wasn't, I would want to know.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm just making that fact that if something happened to my grandmother's deceased body, I'd want to know. Maybe there's a missing person. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's a missing person that... Because Tom and I recently found... a man who stumbled across a body back in 77 or 75, and then he turned up to be missing, and he was never reported missing.
Yeah, 75.
Yeah, he's never been reported missing. We're just now working on getting him into the missing person database. He'd been missing since 1976, and his family didn't really know, but he was an American Indian, and at that point, they really didn't have anybody to reach out to.
Right.
But, so it could be that if there are bodies under the house on the south side of Fort Smith, or with the Casa Dordo, it could be somebody that had been missing that has never been reported missing.
Exactly.
I find it hard to believe she's in the missing person database and NamUs because they've had her remains and they've never had a match.
And what about some of the others earlier? Maybe he had other victims that we don't know about.
Maybe there was some in Kansas City area. Maybe there was some in Holt, Missouri area. Maybe there was some. We don't know, because we don't know where all he traveled when he was selling his leather goods. But this is an interesting thing. He always played the good neighbor role. So,
and now,
one of his victims, he...
Yes, before you start this, I want to add a little color to this whole thing. So, Charles Ray Vines was... we'll say a functioning alcoholic, drug addict, whatever. Okay.
My non-professional opinion.
He went to church.
Oh, yeah, because some of his victims he met at church.
Okay. No.
One of the victims he drove to church, thought of her as like a grandmother.
Okay. So now everybody think about this. He's acting like a good guy. Mm-hmm. He's driving people to church, active in the community.
Fixing people's flower beds.
Fixing flower beds.
Vegetable gardens. But cutting trees down for them.
So now I'm going to let you start on this story about him driving her to church and then what happens.
Well, he would drive her to church. He would also help her with her flower, with landscaping. And then he brutally attacks, kills her, and rapes her. And after all that, he says, I thought of her like a grandmother. Okay? Is that where you're going with this?
Yes.
And then...
So you don't know who you're working with right now. If you're out there.
Well, you're describing, all those activities you're describing are victim acquisition.
Okay. Yeah. So now Dordo, when she's dumped, it is identified the material that her head is wrapped in and her torso is wrapped in is a black material that's used for landscaping.
Yeah, that mesh.
Tom and I talk about this all the time. When there's that much smoke, there's probably a fire somewhere.
Right. I mean... this guy's a good guy. I mean, he portrays it. He does that on purpose to get his victims.
Mm-hmm. And Tom's right. And, I mean,
and,
that's...
And the thing about him is he's unpredictable.
He's very. In fact, people, when I'll call and talk to a cold case team, they'll say, well, what is his motive of operation? What is his tactic? You can't really say he has one because he is attacked and left for dead an elderly blind lady. He's attacked a 50-something-year-old. He's attacked and killed a 50-something-year-old. Attacked and killed a woman that was older than that. And then gets caught brutally attacking and attempting to murder and rape, or rape and attempting to murder, a 16-year-old.
So he has no...
No.
There's really... You can't really profile
you
this
can't.
Guy because...
I don't think so. I'm not a profiler, but...
And he has fantasies of necrophilia.
And admitted to it and seemed to be proud of that.
So he's... He's everywhere on the radar. I mean, just you can't put him in one specific place.
I can't. I mean, I know there's profilers that have tried to do that with him.
And I know you and I've talked about this a lot. And you know that I'm always trying to say, okay, there's got to be one thing that he does every single time. And there's not. There's
Other
really
than
not.
The knife.
Yeah, the knife and the brutal beating.
And the brutal beating.
That's the only two things that we could come up with that is consistent with Charles Ray Vines.
Well, the typical explanation for drinking is to loosen your inhibitions. So I can see where that would be how he talked himself into his deviant side.
Do you think any of it had to do with him being raised up around the funeral home?
No, not necessarily. I mean, we don't really know what that was when his father was involved in the funeral home in Greenwood. We don't know what is the son
no,
was involved
we don't.
In, and we don't have any information. Unfortunately, there's the Alvin rule for his father who passed away several years ago. So
now there was another victim that I want to mention real quickly. There was a victim that lived on the south side of Fort Smith that he had done some work for, and she was home alone, and somebody tried to break in her house. And fortunately, her husband and children drive up at the same time. The husband sees him and chases him, and the husband identified him as he believed to be Charles Ray Vines. So that woman was very lucky.
Yes, very lucky. Had he gotten into that house, there's no telling... We probably dealing
Have
with
another
murder.
Mm-hmm. But how many more out there that we don't know about?
Exactly. And that's one of the points I was trying to make earlier is that we don't know from 1990 back, we don't know how many there may have been. Now, there's a blip for 85 that we may have something on. Not quite sure. But well, he was in the area.
He was. It was on just a regular search, not anything as high profile or as quality that a lot of people use, probably Tom. But I come across this address that listed, and I sent it to Tom. Tom did some further, and he talked about that earlier in the podcast, maybe in part one.
Yeah, part one.
But I think that where we're at now is that Tom and I would love to have input from anybody, whether it's somebody that dated him, somebody that worked with him, somebody that drank with him, maybe even somebody that didn't know him but has a long-lost aunt that's missing or a cousin that's missing or a mother that's missing or, you know, anything that could be associated with him. And especially anybody that may have come across him or remembers him from the park in Paris, Arkansas. There was some reason that he spent a lot of time there.
Right. So if you're down around in the Paris area.
He believed in Bigfoot, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of people around area believe in Bigfoot.
But he was big into Bigfoot. He believed that he had seen a Bigfoot. So I don't know if that's one of the reasons he spent so much time out in the woods. But he talked about Bigfoot quite often. He also talked about herbal medicines and... some just really odd things. But then when I go back and see that he was given the excellence in chemistry and mathematics and physics, I think he was a lot more intelligent than what any of us want to mm-hmm. give him credit for.
And a lot of the really intelligent folks have a little bit of a problem adapting socially with others.
And then, Tom, how early did he say his drug use started? It was
12.
Pretty young.
12
or
13, somewhere down in there.
To me, that's still just a little child. But I read recently that the average child that starts experimenting with drugs and alcohol, the age is around 8 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's scary.
But Charles Ray Vines, one interesting, deviant, dark, sadistic individual. We are still looking in a couple of cases where his name has popped up. So the one thing that I'd really like everybody to know that is, if you have ever run across this gentleman or worked with him, drank with him,
or been a possible victim member,
email us at info@remembereverryvictim.com. We would love to hear from you.
They can call us. They can email us. Yes, just, however they want to do it.
Just do that.
They can be part of the podcast the next time we do one, or they can choose not to. We will respect that decision.
Absolutely. One of the other things, you got to talk to his kids, and they're really good. They're doing good now.
I hear that they're excellent community people.
Good deal.
Excellent.
I just want to let everybody else know, we don't get paid for doing this podcast at all. We do this, you know, for community awareness, and everything that we do is basically for the community, for the victims, and to help law enforcement.
We're very passionate about it.
Yes. And if you would like to make a donation, you can go to our website, but remembereveryvictim.com. We have a donation button set up there, also on our Facebook page. But this is something that we're passionate about. We're dedicated to find the truth, to help the families.
And we're making some progress.
Yes, we are making progress.
We can't go on the air and brag about it, though. That's the problem. Tom and I have this conversation quite often. You know, there's sometimes that something's going on in the background of a case that we cannot divulge. And there's valid reasons. And it boils down to, and we all feel this way, you, me, and Tom, and everybody on our teams, that we will never jeopardize a case.
No.
Ever.
Never, ever, ever will we jeopardize a case because we want to find...
We're all there. We all have the same exact
expectations. Expectations, the same goal. Justice, we want the truth, we want the families. You know, and I hate using the word closure, and I heard something earlier today. It's not really so much closure, is that they are survivors, the victims are. Mm-hmm. They are survivors. That closure, it won't come, but... they can go forward knowing that they survived.
Every family has a different version of what would bring them peace.
Right.
Or what would bring them the ability to accept what happened. We've had one family member, her sister was murdered in 1984. And they never knew what happened to her. And so Tom and I met with her a couple of times. And we were able to provide her with the most probability of what actually happened to her sister. And possibly, maybe even have her skull is going to be returned to her. But the sister told us this is the first time in all these years that she has felt closure and that she feels like she can put it to rest. And hopefully they're going to be able to locate that skull that was retained at her time of death, at the time her body was found, and reunite it, and so that it can be buried with her remains.
Yeah, so they
so
can...
we have a lot of little stories like that. We just don't go out there, and especially when we've turned over a new tip or we know there's new activity or there's something new being done on a case.
Tom, oh, we're excited on the inside. We just can't say anything.
Yeah, and Tom, he's really good at containing his excitement, as you can tell.
Yes, yeah.
He really is. But
I can't tell if he's happy or sad all at the same time. He's just straight-laced right there. You know?
And he's organized. I'm disorganized.
Like Tom Cruise said in one of the Mission Impossibles, you have never seen me mad.
I have heard him mad on the phone.
Oh, I tell you.
And my dog was so scared. I had him on speaker, and my dog was so worried, she went and got in the corner and was just sitting in the corner. In fact, that was just today. That was just today. My dog was sitting in the corner like, no, I don't want any part of this.
But we have a great team. Tom does
a
wonderful job.
I was mad at a computer.
Well, I was having trouble with my fax machine. It kept sending blank faxes until I realized that the paper was upside down.
All the simple fourth things try, that we have troubles with.
So it was error user. It's probably error user on his behalf, too. He just didn't want to admit it.
But we can all admit Charles Ray Vines was a bad guy, and he is in a place where he rightfully deserves at this point in time.
I can agree
with
that.
Yeah, but we're not done with him.
No, we're not. Okay. We're not done with him. We're not done with Alvin Lee Myers.
No. Jerry George? We're not done.
Jerry George. We're not done with him either. Mm-mm. No.
There's a bunch of them that their names still pop up.
Yeah, you know something else funny? We're talking about killers. Let's talk about Mark Chapman, because Mark Chapman has endorsed Revamp.
Okay,
you know who Mark Chapman
thing.
Is,
yes.
Right?
Okay, so
Mark
for
Anthony
the audience,
Chapman.
You tell them who Mark Chapman is.
Mark Chapman is the man who pulled the trigger and killed John Lennon, and he writes to me also, and he has said that he thinks we're doing great work, and that if we want his endorsement, he is willing to give it. I can't get Tom and Greg on board with this.
I will say one thing. I would like to
He also said I'm as close as Jesus-like as they'll come. So, okay, and y'all know me well. That's not true.
To get an endorsement from Mark Chapman, I would have to kindly decline the offer.
Hey, he lived in Fort Smith at one time.
Oh.
People don't realize that, but he lived here, and he worked at Fort Chaffee when the refugees were here.
That was back in the early 80s, wasn't it? Or 70s. No.
70s.
70, sorry. Yeah,
yeah,
back in the 70s.
And he got real disillusioned with our government and life in general, really, because he didn't think the refugees were being treated humanely. And I have heard stories from people that worked with him that he would spend his whole check buying toys and stuff for the children because the children had nothing. And he felt so bad about it. He would come in on his day off and organize games for them. He would spend all of his checks sometimes on toys and games for the kids. I think he had his heart in the right spot. So he gets mad at John Lennon because it fits right along. He hears the song Imagine. That's his favorite song. And then he reads Catcher in the Rye. Now, he quit talking to me for a while because I read Catcher in the Rye and I asked him, how in the world did you get murdering someone out of Catcher in the Rye? But he says he did. But he thought that John Lennon was a hypocrite. That he was singing about peace and love, but yet he was living in a life of sin, doing drugs and alcohol, laying in bed in one of the most expensive pieces of real estate in New York. So he made two trips there to get him, to knock him out. And when he did, he didn't run. He just waited for the cops to show up.
Yeah, I think we'll say no on the endorsement.
All right, but that offer's out there.
Chapman.
I have it in writing.
Yeah, well, I'm just going
to
say
we know where to get it if we have to.
Yeah.
He's exactly where we know he is.
Yeah, that's...
Well, let's hope he stays there because...
I think he will.
Yeah.
Well, I thought the other guy, the one that shot the president, Hinkle?
Hinkley,
yeah. Different set of circumstances. He was criminally insane when it happened, when he did it.
You don't think Mark Chapman was?
He wasn't proved to be.
Okay, I guess my non-professional opinion doesn't count.
Charles Ray Vines. He wasn't criminally insane when he committed those crimes. A psychologist.
Okay, you've proven your point. You do not want the endorsement of Mark Chapman.
No. How much was he drinking?
Mark Chapman?
A day, yeah. Did he drink any?
No, he didn't drink. He was very religious.
Yeah.
In fact, he has a religious ministry right now that he operates from prison.
Oh.
He sent me a lot of brochures on it.
Voluntary intoxication is not a justification.
The devil
we read that.
Devil made me do
That's
it.
True.
It's not a got it. Well, folks, it's been fun. Another great episode. We went from Charles Ray Vines.
And when there's new information on Charles Ray Vines, we will share it. We'll
Absolutely.
Do another one.
So, just
but
remember,
I just want people to know that there's a lot out there about Charles Ray Vines, and it might not be true, and it might be true, but what we're telling you, we have gotten from people that are very close to the source, and we have gotten written information, we've got documentation. So don't let anybody tell you that he was groomed for the position he was in, or that he was mentally disabled, or, you know, none of that. No.
Wasn't the case.
He was just evil.
Yeah.
Evil.
Pure evil. Just one day he'd snap, do that.
I don't even think he had a snap.
No, he just...
I think he'd be like just driving around and say, yeah.
Yeah, I think I could do that. And then he'd go and do it. All right, so another great episode. If you did know Charles Ray Vines, worked with him, was a drinking buddy or anything, email us info.
Played pool with him.
Yeah, played pool with him. email us at info@rememberEveryVictim.com or go to our website, rememberEveryVictim.com, Facebook page, and we will not forget
none
anyone.
Nope.
Never.